We'll now proceed to the fifth case, Hussein versus Holder. Ms. Peters.
May it please the court. My name is Ann Peters, and I represent Tariq Hussein and Rafia Tariq. The Board of Immigration Appeals, erred in that the Board applied an incorrect test to the determination of the motion to reopen. The motion to reopen was filed in July of 2013 based on increased killing of Shia Muslims by Islamic extremists in Pakistan. In the first 3 months of 2013, almost 300 Shia Muslims were killed in these extremist assassinations.
Do you agree with the government's footnote 4 that you've not challenged the denial of Convention Against Torture Protection and have therefore waived review of that issue?
Judge, we did not make that argument for a CAT relief. In the denial of the motion to reopen, the board applied a substantially similar test. This is not the test. The test in the regulation states that one must determine whether or not there was a changed circumstance and then whether or not that circumstance was material.
Could I ask you where the Husseins are now? Have they been removed to Pakistan?
No, Judge, they're here with all of their children.
Do we know the status of the cases for the children who were old enough to have their claims severed?
Yes, Judge, and the children have received deferred action for childhood arrivals, the executive policy that allowed people under 16 who were got their education and don't have any serious crimes to remain in the U.S.
So they would, that those children would remain?
Well, the family would like to stay together. The children are very close to their parents, and so they're afraid to allow their parents to go back to Pakistan on their own. They're afraid they'll be killed, frankly.
Well, the age of the children is what, in their 20s?
Yes, Judge. Many of them are in school. One of them is trying to figure out how to get funding to go to grad school. So, yes. The board, in applying whether or not conditions were substantially similar, erred as a matter of law. On that basis, the case should be remanded to the board to apply the correct test.
I would appreciate your explaining what the prejudice from the denial of the motion for continuance is. I mean, have the Husseins ever been able to obtain this additional information? Because if they don't have it now, a continuance of a few months wouldn't have helped them. And
Judge, I believe, are you asking about the Canadian board decision?
Yeah.
Yes. The incomplete record that was relied on was unreliable because it was a decision of Canadian board judges who were referring to what was stated in evidence. We have no transcript. Who were referring to a letter. We do not have an evidence. A personal information form, which is not in evidence. The judge's opinions about what was said and submitted at that hearing is what has been relied on. And that is highly prejudicial and hearsay.
Could you ever get the other pieces of evidence?
Judge, we have not gotten that evidence. The affidavit submitted by counsel previously in his motion to continue did say that he believed that he could, if given more time, obtain that full record, but was not able to. There was a discussion in a previous hearing in which counsel expressed a concern that the immigration judge was not going to review the case de novo, and the immigration judge said, no, no, this is for purposes of corroboration, and I want to see what the respondent, what the petitioner, Mr. Hussein, said at the Canadian hearing, and I want to see what he submitted. But in the end, we did not have the transcript, and we did not have that evidence. We simply had a summary by the Canadian judges of what transpired at the hearing.
When was the last country report submitted in this case?
Judge, 2013, July of 2013, when the motion to reopen was filed.
So it's relatively recent. I
mean, yes, relatively Judge. Recent. The issue of unreliability is compacted because the immigration judge also based his decision on an unreliable border interview. We did cite the case of Moab, which discusses various reasons of why a person who is afraid of governments may not divulge their full story at a border, at an airport, to a government official who may look like a police officer, etc. The mischaracterization of evidence on the record in the immigration proceeding in Chicago is lengthy. It boils down to the petitioners giving additional details in their 2008 statement versus a 2010 statement versus testimony. The immigration judge seems to say that they changed their story. However, additional detail as far as the National People's Party being behind drug trafficking and whether or not money was demanded at various times, we have explained. If Your Honors have questions on the inconsistencies, I would be happy to try to answer them. But the main point is that the statements were not inconsistent. There was additional detail. And the petitioners recounted events that transpired from 1993 up until 2011 at the first hearing.
Is the government correct that they didn't argue changed circumstances in Pakistan to the IJ?
Judge, the statements of the petitioners clearly said that the 2007 death of the nephew scared them. They believed that the nephew was killed by the NPP, the same culprit they feared. And the immigration judge discusses this in the hearing, and he does acknowledge that petitioners made this argument, yet in his final decision, he does not analyze changed circumstances. He fails to do that. When the board then has the case, the board fails again to apply the test of materiality. To this changed circumstance, the board says the 2007 event was not connected to events that transpired 14 years earlier. Again, that is not the test. The test is whether or not there was a change circumstance, whether or not that circumstance is material. The board failed to apply the proper test.
So are you arguing that they... Yes, you are. Never mind.
Okay, thank you, Judge.
Thank you.
The final point is that the petitioners did establish political opinion. The National People's Party and other parties in Pakistan were established to be corrupt, that corruption in politics is the culture in Pakistan. The judge and the board did not analyze imputed political opinion in the context of Pakistan, which is known to be corrupt. Political killings, police corruption, bribery, extortion. This evidence was submitted, but it was not seriously considered by the judge or by the board. So the imputed political opinion, which this court and others have held, can be imputed when there is retaliation for the expression of corruption in a government or in a political party in this case. So the main arguments here are that these petitioners didn't get a fair shot at this trial. The immigration judge from the beginning asked, at every hearing he asked for this Canadian decision. He wanted it. And to the point where petitioner's counsel was concerned about de novo review, voiced it, the judge said no. But in the end, the judge mimicked the Canadian decision and took what the judges said in the Canadian decision for fact when it was simply not in evidence. And the reason that in our process we have the full transcript of proceedings is to protect against this kind of injustice.
Well, Ms. Peters, I'm going to follow up what Judge Roedner said. You are not possessed of the transcript from Canada.
No, Judge.
And what about attempts to get it? I mean, if there's a reopening, what's your position? That you just need more time?
Judge, if there were a reopening, I would try myself to get the Canadian decision.
And if it was unavailable?
If it's unavailable, an incomplete record cannot be relied on.
So you'd want another hearing before the IJ?
Yes, Judge.
And before that hearing, you would present what new? Assuming no Canadian transcript, what would be presented at the new hearing?
Judge, simply the testimony of petitioners to be considered fairly by the judge, to be considered without the inconsistencies of petitioners to be considered by the judge without referral to facts not in evidence.
Okay. Want to save some time for rebuttal?
Yes, Judge, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Peters. Mr. Severino?
Thank you, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Petitioners have offered five shifting stories as to why they fear being returned to Pakistan. Because those stories contain significant inconsistencies and because they were filed late, the petition for review should be dismissed for lack of jurisdiction and otherwise denied under the substantial evidence test and the abuse of discretion standards of review. They raise four issues upon review. They dispute the denial of the asylum claim, which was found to be untimely. It had to be within a year. It was not. They dispute the denial withholding claim, where the court relied substantially on an adverse credibility finding and a lack of nexus. They dispute the denial of the continuance based on an allegedly incomplete record when they had 3 years to supplement that record. And finally, they argue with the denial of their newest asylum claim based on a motion to reopen, which was also denied for being untimely and a lack of sufficiently changed circumstances. On the first issue of the asylum claim, petitioners arrived in 1993. They did not seek asylum then. They went to Canada in 2003. Returned in 2006, they did not seek asylum then either. In 2008 is when they made their first petition for asylum. The agency found that to be untimely under 8 U.S.C. 1158A2B and found that there was no exceptional circumstances or no changed circumstances to justify the delay. This decision, this determination, is not subject to this court's appellate review under 8 U.S.C. 1158A3, which is that any determination considering the timeliness of an asylum application is not subject to review. The petitioners did not actually raise the changed circumstances argument below, but nevertheless the agency did consider it essentially in a belts and suspenders approach. It found that their arguments on the extraordinary circumstances did not hold water. Simply being given bad advice by a friend or bad advice by counsel when they did not file a proper ineffective assistance of counsel claim does not constitute extraordinary circumstances. The 2007 death of the nephew was also found not to consist of a changed circumstance because it was not properly linked to the original claim of political persecution and also any future claim. And this is where I dispute our friends on the other side. The board did consider whether or not the 2007 events would affect future persecution. On the issue of denial withholding, the standard there is whether it is more likely than not that petitioners would face persecution based on a protected basis. Here they claim political persecution now. However, when they arrived in 1993, they did not claim any persecution. 2003, they went to Canada. They claimed persecution based on criminal extortion. And in terms of what the record evidence shows, in the administrative record, page 870 to 872, here are the statements that were signed by the petitioners, handwritten by an immigration official in Canada, which relates what their story was in terms of their being victims of crime and extortion and folks demanding money of them. The immigration judge questioned petitioners on this very evidence and said, did you actually tell this story? What did you say? Et cetera, et cetera. So it was not as if the court simply relied on the Canadian Immigration Tribunal's characterizations or summaries of it. They had the originals of what transpired. That was the evidence that was used for the credibility determinations, and the judge questioned the petitioners on this precise pieces of evidence.
Mr. Severino, you know we're dealing here with what seems to be quite a lovely family. Has there been a request for prosecutorial discretion? I saw that the IJ suggested they could seek it in his oral decision. What's the status of that request?
I don't have an update for you, Your Honor, but the decision for prosecutorial discretion lies with the Department of Homeland Security. In the first instance, I will certainly raise the issue with them again. And the immigration judge below was sensitive to the family, and because of that did indeed sever the children's to see if they would be eligible under deferred action. So we are sensitive to those concerns, Your Honor.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know what I mean, so.
Yes, Your Honor, and we are sensitive to those concerns. And we do have, in terms of the agency-wide prosecutorial discretion, and we will raise it with the Department of Homeland Security.
Now, is it the current policy to defer to Homeland Security by justice, or do you advance a view, or does it have to be asked of justice?
Well, I have to be careful with revealing deliberative
process. Well, I don't mean to go into confidential
information,
matters.
But
I just
generally,
matter, is it a matter whatever the is the public record? I understand it's initially in the province of the Department of Homeland Security, that part of the executive part. I just wondered, is following up on Judge Roeder's question, wait until that decision comes about, or is it asked its input? I don't want you to go into confidential matters, but
also
executive departments, I just want to know if there's anything public that we...
Well, you wouldn't mind if you did, but...
it all depends on the procedural posture. Prosecutorial discretion really could start from the very beginning when the immigrant arrives to they're warming up the jets.
No, I appreciate the enormous discretion. I just wondered if there's... If one knows... If Ms. Peters were to make inquiry of the progress, as you've indicated you're willing to look at, does she first go to Homeland Security? Is that where you go first?
I don't think there's a rule that they must go one or the other, but I can say that the Department of Justice at various points on that spectrum does play a role.
No, I'm sure.
Well, absolutely.
I would request that we be given a status report on that situation.
On what, Judge Rovner, on the
prosecutorial discretion?
You may call me Alana. On the prosecutorial discretion issue.
Judge Rovner, you're inquiring as to the current status of that of this particular application?
Well, that we be told.
Well, I think, Mr. Severino, you offered to find out what that
right.
is.
Yes, we'll find
so
out, and we can update you.
If we could
you.
Have a report on that.
Certainly. That shouldn't be a problem.
Thank you.
Thank you.
But this, what was the decision by the Canadian panel, was that 10 years ago? Is that when it was?
The decision was 2004.
2004.
Yes, they entered 2003.
10 years ago. Yeah.
Yes.
But would you agree that was there? We had their decision, but without any indication of what the evidentiary evidence was.
No, the it was actually an appellate decision that was eventually submitted. Decision. Yes, eventually submitted to the immigration authorities in the United States. The record is incomplete in that sense. However, the decision does lay out the evidence that was relied upon, and we do have copies of some of the initiating documents at the border in Canada. So the testimony there that was submitted in Canada in terms of credibility assessments is substantially complete, and it's unclear to me what more could be added if we had, say, the full transcript. And I don't even know what Canadian procedures are. I don't know if they have the same transcripts as we do for our proceedings.
I'm not sure what kind of transcript we have either when it goes to tape recorders and all that.
Yeah, and in our transcripts, the judge was very careful in saying, first, there was not going to be a reliance on the conclusions of the Canadian authorities. This was going to be a complete de novo review. And the evidence from Canada was used essentially for impeachment. What you told another governing body, I'm going to question you on, and tell me your story. Why did you say this? Was it inaccurate? And gave petitioners a full chance to air out their side. And they tried. They said, well, we said more, but it was not all reflected in the documents that came out in the Canadian procedures. And this comes to the main point. There may be an explanation that could thread the needle for the shifting, conflicting stories. But the standard of review here is whether or not there was substantial evidence. And under Elias Zacharias, that means the evidence must compel reversal, meaning the alternative theory that could wind it all together, that must be compelled by the evidence. And that's simply not the case. I think the judge is well within his discretion to say, I just don't find them credible based on the demeanor, based on the conflicting evidence, based on the clearest conflict being they abandoned in 2011 the claim that money was at all involved with their attacks. Early on they were saying they were asking for money. Then they said actually it was about politics. Then they said, well, actually it was about these guys were drug dealers. And in 2011, under questioning by the judge, they said, well, when we were beaten up, they didn't ask for money. And the judge was very careful to say, really, they didn't ask for money? No, they did not ask for money, which contradicts the statement submitted to Canada and Canadian authorities. So that's enough on the record to say the judge, taking the totality of the circumstances, you're not credible. Without giving undue deference to the Canadian result, the judge looked at the evidence and came to that conclusion.
Did you have anything further?
On the issue of materiality of the last motion to reopen, counsel for the other side argues that there was changed circumstances that were substantially similar, being a different standard review. If things stay the same, they remain substantially similar. That is not a new legal test. The test in the Joseph case said that it was a, I'll quote, a dramatic change. The judge did not use a dramatic change standard. Substantially similar is the same as staying the same. And for the record sites as to the conditions being the same, at 230, 20,000 Shias were killed since the early 80s. That was entered into evidence. At 210, nearly 4,000 Shia killed since the early 1990s. At 220, the main anti-Shia terror groups have been active in Pakistan since at least 2001. So there was enough evidence there in the record to say these does not constitute changed circumstances. It has remained substantially similar, and it was fully aired. And the judge said, within discretion, I'm sorry, but you have not carried the burden. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Mr. Severino, with regard to that possible status report,
yes.
Is 14 days, would you be able to do it in 14 days?
That should be okay.
All right, then we would ask that.
Is there any, would it be a filing or a letter?
To a letter is fine. General, right?
I can't imagine.
Notarized.
Yeah, no, a letter would be fine, obviously. Days. Copy to Ms. Peters.
Very well.
All right, thank you, Severino.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor.
Judge Blum.
They need more than can request. Ms. Peters?
Your Honors, the reference to the Joseph case, I'll begin with. In Joseph, the court was discussing that there not need be a change in a whole political party of a country, that a change can be personal, it can be local. It need not be a dramatic change. In Boyka, this court said the worsening of conditions will suffice as a change in circumstances, even if there are previous human rights violations, even though there have been 20,000 Shias killed because of their religion by extremists, Islamists. That does not mean that there was not a changed circumstance in 2013 when the British Parliament issued possibly the largest report to the United Nations, Special Rapporteur, on the targeting of Shia Muslims, their killing by extremists because of their religion, that they were considered infidels. And the British Parliament was so worried about this, they issued this large report in 2013. This court has looked to the response of the U.S. government in issuing sanctions against other countries to determine whether or not there has been a changed circumstance. So here, looking to the British Parliament's reaction to these changes in 2013 is relevant, and it does show a material change. Whether or not circumstances are substantially similar, I must repeat, is not the test. The test is laid out in the regulations, and it is whether or not the change is material to the underlying asylum claim. As far as the filing of the asylum claim, the family comes here in 1993. They go to a lawyer. They're told that they shouldn't file because they may not win. They're afraid. They don't want to go back to Pakistan. September 11th happens. They're Muslim. They're afraid to be here. They go to Canada. The board does consider an unreliable border declaration written out. You have it in the record, written out by hand, sloppily. We're afraid of the hoodlums who are attacking us. The statement does not say particular things, but it is understood that a border declaration made when someone is in a traumatic scenario under great stress, very afraid, they don't know what to say, that cannot be relied on.
Well, Ms. Peters, Mr. Severino points out, though, that the immigration judge did give an opportunity for an expanded response based on those documents. So I appreciate what you're saying about what may have been the environment surrounding when they wrote them out, but is it true that the immigration judge examined them on the documents themselves and gave them an opportunity to obviously expand if they wished?
Judge, I believe that the immigration judge found, that the Canadian board found, that these declarations were inconsistent with other evidence given.
No, I appreciate that.
Yes, to answer your question, he did consider those. The missing evidence from the Canadian decision was a personal information form, a letter, testimony, and a statement. That was the missing evidence. The border declarations were there.
Who presented the evidence that you're seeking?
I'm sorry, Judge. Which
the evidence? The actual testimony and or whatever evidence that the Canadians relied on.
The immigration judge requested the full record. I'm not answering your question, Judge. I'm sorry. During the Canadian board proceeding, counsel in Canada apparently presented a statement. A personal information form was filled out. That's a document that's used that I think is akin to an asylum application.
Who?
by petitioners.
Okay.
Now, do those forms do anything other than recount ministerial facts, or do they also speak to a more broader, the broader issue that is reflected in those handwritten documents?
Judge, I do not know the answer to that question. I would be happy to try to research what a personal information form and supplement the record, if you would like.
I'm not requiring that.
Okay. I do know that a personal information form, a statement, and a letter that was from the other business partner that did not threaten Tariq Hussein was relied on in the Canadian decision. You had two business partners, Tayeb and Malik. Malik writes a letter that's considered by the Canadian board. Tayeb is the one who was threatening.
So, Ms. Peters, just so I understand it, is it your concern that the Canadian proceedings may contain helpful information that was not available to the IJ?
Yes, Judge, and that judges and attorneys misstate the evidence when they recall the evidence. They are fallible, and we do not have the evidence that was actually stated, given.
All right, and your position also, so that I understand it, is even if there isn't sufficient evidence, apart from any Canadian proceedings, for the IJ to arrive at the decision that was arrived at here? I mean, let's just set aside, as you say, we don't have it, anything from Canada, although we do have those handwritten documents that Mr. Severino mentioned and that the IJ examined. Is it your position that what is it that is insufficient in what the IJ had apart from the Canadian proceedings?
Insufficient.
Insufficient
to reach his conclusion was that the judge relied not only on the incomplete record, but also on border statements which have been found to have indicators of unreliability, as well as inconsistencies
found by
the judge in Chicago were inaccurate. Many of these inconsistencies cited, in petitioner's brief, we have 3 pages, I believe, that tried to explain in detail that there were added details in statements, in testimony. There were added details, yes. The petitioners did not each time recount A happened, B happened, C happened, D happened. Petitioner said A happened, and actually I found out later that the NPP was behind it. Actually, they did ask for money. Over the course of many years, this family, not experts in testifying, did tell the same story with added detail over and over and over again. There was an inconsistency about money, whether or not money was demanded. In Pakistan, in the country reports, it's seen that extortion and bribery are common. That does not exclude the evidence.
You're suggesting not inconsistencies, but things are incomplete, and they just got added to it at subsequent times?
Yes, Judge. In a 2008 statement, in a 2010 statement, in testimony at the hearing in Chicago.
And is it your position that, based on that, the judge was in error to find inconsistencies, but rather should have said, well, it's just a more fulsome statement on date X versus date Y?
Yes, Judge, except for one instance where petitioners at one time testified money was asked for and one time testified money was not asked for, and this was in the context of petitioners, their entire family, their children, at Rafia Tariq's mother's home, running from these criminals, having been beaten, threatened. They're running away. They're at the mother-in-law's home. Men come in. One has a gun. They tie Tariq up. They threaten the mother-in-law, Rafia, the children. They bind him and they take him for several days. In that setting, there was later testimony that went either way. They did ask for money. They didn't ask for money. There was an inconsistency there. That's understandable.
Okay. I'm just going to have to ask you to wrap it up.
Judges, thank you. I respectfully request remand in this case.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Peters. Thank you, Ms. Severance. The court will proceed.